Lucas on Life.
Hello and welcome to Lucas on Life. And of course, tonight there's only really one thing to talk about. Jesus is alive, and this Easter day, as followers of his, we celebrate that wonderful reality. Tonight, in this special program for Easter, I'd like us just to sit back, perhaps at the end of a very busy Sunday, and allow the wonderful truth to sink into our souls again as we share some Easter readings and reflections. He has risen. Come with me to that first Easter day. We read about it in John chapter 20. Verse 11 says, Mary stood outside the tomb crying, and as she cried, she bent over to look into the tomb. She saw two angels dressed in white. They were seated where Jesus' body had been. One of them was where Jesus' head had been laid. The other sat where his feet had been placed. They asked her, Woman, why are you crying? They've taken my Lord away, she said. I don't know where they put him. Then she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she didn't realize that it was Jesus. Woman, he said, why are you crying? Who are you looking for? She thought he was the gardener. So she said, Sir, did you carry him away? Tell me where you put him. Then I will go and get him. Jesus said to her, Mary. She turned towards him, and then she cried out in the Aramaic language, Rabboni. Rabboni means teacher. Jesus said, Do not hold on to me. I have not yet returned to the Father. Instead, go to those who believe in me. Tell them I am returning to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God. Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news. She said, I've seen the Lord. And she told them that he had said these things to her. Jesus' appearance to Mary Magdalene is really wonderful, especially back in that day in a culture where women were denigrated. In his gospel, John paints such a tender portrait of their meeting. Mary's eyes were swollen with tears of despair, but then Jesus appears, not in a blinding flash of light or with a drum roll of fanfare, but as someone that you could mistake for a gardener. There were so many things that he could have said at that moment. I told you so. Death is finished. Mission accomplished. I've got the keys of death and hell. But instead, Jesus' priority was to reassure one of his distressed followers. It's only when he tenderly spoke her name that she suddenly realized the truth. It was Jesus. He's alive. I've spoken of it often, but I think it's perhaps worth repeating. I came into ministry as a result of an encounter with a guest speaker at a youth weekend. His name was John Barr. I was only a few weeks old as a Christian at that time. John announced that three of us were called into ministry and that God had told him our first and last names as he drove to our weekend. When I asked him a question after an evening service, by the way, without introducing myself, he said, Your name is Jeff Lucas, isn't it? God has called you, hasn't he? That night was a junction point, a turning point, not only in my vocation, but in my heart. You see, God knew my name, and he knows your name too. And there's something else here that's so vital. During one of our tours to Israel, our group was touring the ruins of Magdala, the city in Israel where Mary Magdalene lived. One of our group took me aside and asked the question, how do we know that Mary was a prostitute? I decided to conduct some research, and I was really shocked by the result because the Bible never suggests that Mary engaged in prostitution. She's mentioned in all four Gospels, was present at Jesus' crucifixion, and was part of a team that traveled with Jesus preaching the good news of the kingdom. Jesus appeared to her after the resurrection. In other words, she played an extremely prominent part in his ministry. Many scholars believe that the early church became increasingly uncomfortable with a woman playing such a significant leadership role, and so they began to cast her as a prostitute, smearing her reputation and therefore diminishing her contribution to the gospel story. The biblical reference to her previously having seven demons presumably made her an easy target. The travesty was compounded by Pope Gregory the Great in AD 591, when he preached a sermon that tagged Mary Magdalene as the unidentified sinful woman who washed Jesus' feet with her tears. That totally false idea became official church teaching. It grieves me to say that countless gifted, anointed women leaders continue to be sidelined and dismissed because of their gender. Female church leaders are routinely verbally abused for no other reason than they're seeking to pursue God's calling upon their lives. Let's pray for them and encourage them whenever we can. He, Jesus, is risen, and he appeared to Mary. We read in Luke 24 this beautiful story. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what's more, it's the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus." He said to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. So, what do you do when you've conquered the power of death and hell? Angels surely wondered what Jesus would do next after the resurrection. Now later, a whole 6 weeks would be spent with him on earth, taking the apostles through the most incredible leadership training program that there has ever been. But what now? What that amazing evening? Well, you go for a stroll if you're Jesus. In Mark's version of this delightful story, we're not told much about them. Luke gives us a much fuller version. Luke only names one, Cleopas, who may have been the brother of Joseph, Jesus' earthly father. But the real point of this story is that these two were living outside of the knowledge that Christ was risen. Their journey home was torturous. They were so paralyzed by despair, they could hardly take another step. But that walk with Jesus changed everything. One of the most wonderful aspects of the resurrection of Jesus that I so enjoy is that much of what goes on, it's just so ordinary. After the resurrection, as we saw earlier, Jesus was mistaken for a gardener. Later, he cooks breakfast for some friends returning from a frustrating night shift. And here, in this episode, we see him taking a walk with some other distraught friends, ending the day by sharing supper in their home. It's all very pedestrian, all rather beautiful. And surely that's the nature of faith, the truth that the extraordinary God walks with us through the mundane, boring, and yes, painful bits of life, of which there are many. Jesus has washed my sins away, but I still have to clean the car, reconcile my bank statement, and do a host of other rather numbing things that, to quote Julie Andrews, are definitely not listed among a few of my favorite things. Today, this evening, he is with us. And then as we look at what Luke reveals about the conversation between the two on the Emmaus Road and Jesus, we see that some of the most authentic prayers can begin with the phrase, "We had hoped." God invites us to bring our disappointments, our unfulfilled dreams to him. And as we do that, it may be that we have to let go of some of those hopes, because God never promises to answer every prayer with a yes. These two Well, they were hoping for a military messiah who would overthrow those hated Roman invaders, kick the puppet King Herod off of the throne, and save Israel. But Jesus was doing something far bigger, far better. His work was about the redemption of the planet. He doesn't resolve their disappointment by fulfilling their dreams, but rather shows them that their dreams were too limited. Let's be authentic in our prayers and share with God how we feel, especially when we sense a no from Him. He knows what's on our hearts anyway, but invites us to be intentionally honest. Prayer, it's about being honest with the risen, ascended Jesus. It's not about making religious speeches. Well, let's think about how that walk on the Emmaus Road ended that evening. We read again in Luke 24, as they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he were going farther, but they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it's nearly evening, the day's almost over." So they went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?" They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them, assembled together and saying, "It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. "The man looked at me, his face fixed in what seemed to be a permanently stern expression. He hadn't appreciated my love of humor in preaching. 'We don't have fun in this church,' he said. 'We have joy.' I looked closer into his eyes, and I have to say, joy seemed to be buried very deep, 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 deep down in his heart." I've always pictured Jesus as being warm, utterly engaging, capable of laughing out loud. He wouldn't have been such a popular party guest if this were not so, even with his unusual ability for providing gallons of vintage quality wine. And then children aren't drawn naturally to wooden, wide-eyed fanatics. In this story of this beautiful meal at the end of the day, Jesus exhibited a wonderful playfulness as he staged what looks like a little joke on the Emmaus Road. I'm aware that some listeners might struggle with the notion of a playful Jesus, but if that's true, perhaps we should stop right now and ask ourselves this question. Why would the idea of a warm, winsome, and fun Jesus be so offensive? When Luke tells us that Jesus acted as if he were going farther, he used a word that means pretend. Jesus gave the impression of something that was not, to see how his two friends would act under those circumstances. There's nothing unkind about his fun. It's a smile with a purpose, but surely it's a smile nonetheless. All of which makes me wonder how much about Jesus we've got wrong. Have some of us painted him in drab, somber colours, when in fact he's such a sparkling-eyed, utterly engaging, fully alive person? Surely we need to all keep asking God to show us the real Jesus. So at last, they recognized him. It was Jesus. Imagine sharing a meal with someone who you were mourning because of their recent death. What an incredible ending to the day. All the disappointments swept away, and now the two are feeling a wonderful heartburn, authentic joy, because now they knew not only that Jesus was alive, but because of his sharing such an epic roadway Bible study with them, they understood so much more of the big picture of God's story. But what next? Well, despite it being so late in the day when tiredness would have made their bones ache and the very real threat of bandits on the dark road back to Jerusalem, they set off for yet another 7-mile trek back to the city to share the wonderful news. Jesus is alive. Sometimes we only get as far as the heartwarming experiences. We can be stirred in a worship service, moved to tears by clear biblical preaching, comforted by the sacraments, but then we leave the warm atmosphere of worship and don't put into action what we've learned. We've been shaken, stirred, but in reality, unchanged. But not those two. They seized the day. They headed out. The heartburn probably wore off on the road. And sometimes it does for us. Sometimes we do our Christianity without any feelings at all. To follow Christ is simply the right way. Perhaps some of us are in that place right now. We're somewhat emotionally flatlining about our faith. Excitement has packed up and left, even on this Easter day. But if that's true for you, keep going anyway, because our feelings are not the barometer of our spirituality. Our feelings come and go, but what is true will always be true. His love endures forever. Jesus is alive. See you next week.
Lucas on Life.